This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful, and it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout, and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today. You'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
Fake the Nation, episode 263.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, we talk about feelings, about cultural triumphs, about interpersonal failures, and everything in between. I am your host, Nagin Farsad, and we're taping this a few days earlier than we normally would, but in the era of Biden, where calm people lead, we hopefully, probably won't have breaking news, and if we do miss some news, it'll probably just, like, gently roll out like a yoga mat, just, like, sort of hitting a wooden floor. Is that how we feel right now about the news cycle? I don't know. Is it just me? Today, we're going to talk about the shit kicker that is Tucker Carlson, about dating shows where you don't see the person, and finally, we'll talk about emotions. I am so excited about today's panel, you guys. We have joining us for the very first time the former senior writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. He's also the current author of the Substack, I Might Be Wrong, and he's ever so delightful, folks. It's Jeffrey Maurer. Hey, Jeffrey.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And returning to the show, this is a man that makes the Iranian sandwich a true Iranian sandwich because I can't do it alone, you know? He's on tour right now, and he's going everywhere. So you're going to have a chance to see him, and you absolutely should. It's called the Things Are Looking Bright Comedy Tour. Tickets are available at MazJobrani.com. He's also the host of the podcast Back to School with Maz Jobrani. You'll be surprised to know that he's Maz Jobrani. Hey, Maz.
Hey, Nagin, how are you?
Oh, my God. So good. Jeffrey, this is a real treat for you because you get to have two Iranians on one show. It doesn't happen very often.
It seems statistically unusual if you're not in Iran, I would think.
there, exactly.
Yes, all right, and so, you know, we were going to have the third panelist was going to be the Iron Sheik, but he couldn't make it, so Jeffrey was the clear substitute.
You can't put the Iron Sheik. He's got you know, way too many irons in the fire right now.
Now let's get into it with topic number one. Today we're asking, what is it about dating shows where the two people can't see each other, you know? Like, where the bonds of fake TV romance are cemented by personality alone. Because apparently, like, Netflix has a new show out called Sexy Beasts, where the people are wearing these, like, prosthetic animal
creature faces and they go on dates. So the only thing you really see are their eyeballs or, like, you know, the contours of their dental work. What do you think of these? Like, just first off, like, what do you think of this conceit where two people are falling in love on a TV show and they don't know what each other looks like?
I'll say, I personally think
you love it. I can tell.
Well, is it bad to say that you feel that there's got to be some physical attraction? I think that it's a combination, because you have these shows where it's all physical attraction, and then the person's crazy or nuts or you hate them or whatever. And that exists a lot. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that are physically attractive, that are horrible human beings that you wouldn't want to be around. And then the other side of it is there might be somebody who's super, just you, personality-wise, is fantastic, but no matter what you do, you're not attracted to them or they're not attracted to you. So it's a combination of the two.
Yeah. My take is the same as yours. And I will say I haven't seen Sexy Beast. My wife and I, we're scholars, we're people of letters. We don't watch these trashy. Oh, we do watch Dating Naked. Dating Naked's good. I don't know if you've seen that one, but
which is like the opposite of what we're talking about here.
No, but yeah, it's cerebral. It's cerebral. I don't think you've seen it. It's a good show. Dating Naked and Adam and Eve are our two favorites. Adam and Eve is the European version. It's the exact same show, which I like to bring up because I like that. Sort of pretension double backflip of saying, we like to watch these shows where the two people, they date each other in the nude, but the European one is really superior to the American. But I think Maz hit the nail on the head in that, like, they're having fun with the idea. We all pay lip service to this idea that, you know, looks don't matter. Of course they matter some, you know, they're a factor in the mix. And I got to think what the network wants is they want the situation where the person gets to the end and they unmask. They, you know, all the chemistry was great. Everything was going perfect. This person has won. And then they take the mask off and the person is not very good looking. And then the person who chose them has to decide, do I look like an asshole on national television and say, oh, boy, the looks, it's just that part of the connection isn't there.
Right, right.
Or do they go, oh, good, and then marry the person and live together for 50 years to not look like an asshole?
And that's part of my question is, I wonder if they vet, and I don't think they do, but if, like, at least, for example, if they were to talk to me, they go, okay, so describe to us what you find attractive. I'd be like, A, B, C, and D. And then now they find whatever, a handful of people who kind of have different levels of that, then at least once you get to the end, you could be like, oh, wow, you know, this person has everything I wanted except, you know, one eyebrow is stuck up in one position.
Right,
I'll live
right,
with that.
Right.
But I don't think they do. I think Jeffrey's right. I think the whole point is to get to the point where then at the end, the girl's like, oh, God.
Yeah, my guess is that it's complete feast or famine under those masks.
That's where you're both wrong. I mean, for the record, this conceit of, like, not being able to see the person is not new. It goes back to the Dating Game in the 1960s, right? Like, this has been happening. Love is Blind is another show where this happens, except for in Love is Blind, they're like in cubicles or something where they can't see each other. And they chat via cubicles anyways. But in this show, here's where you're wrong. Everyone's hot. I watched some clips from the show. Yeah, everyone's hot. So it's sort of like, oh, so wait, you didn't even really want. I mean, I think it also puts TV producers in a morally compromising position to take the stance that someone is not hot, right? So they basically only book people who are hot so that nobody thinks that anyone is not hot.
Well,
right? I mean, like, it's a weird position to say, well, we booked this fucking ugly person, you know, let's see how they do.
That's a good point. Though it is also true in entertainment that all the time in a script, you will have a part that's written as, like, unfuckable man. I don't know if I can say that, but then they have to send it out to actors and their agents going, hey, I thought you'd be great for Unfuckable Man.
I get that all the time.
Oh my God. I get that all the time. No, but I have literally auditioned for a part that was like, you know, Joan, the fattest woman in New Jersey, like in her on her block, you know, and you're looking at me like I'm not, you know, a huge person by any measure. But like those are the kinds of like descriptions that they will that you'll get, you know, over the transom in this ridiculous world that we inhabit of show business.
How long do these people, and I'm just curious because I don't watch any of these dating shows, when the show is over,
yeah,
is it one of these where, okay, now you got to go get married or something? Like, how long do they spend it with each other? Is a week? Is it a day?
It's 50 years.
It's 50 years. I think in Love is Blind, you... Like, correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, but like, I think in Love is Blind, what happens is that you then go to, if you agree that you like how this person looks, and again, everyone is essentially a model or aspiring model or former model. Like, there is a model in these people's resumes, by the way, literally straight up model.
Sometimes okay, a fitness so trainer for diversity.
Yeah, oh, yeah. So they might have flirted with something like that, a fitness trainer. But literally, in Love is Blind, I think what happens is like, you choose to, okay, you're going to like, you're going to like go on an exclusive trip with this person that you've deemed your boyfriend or whatever. And you go to Mexico, and then in Mexico, they put the fucking spotlight on you. And they're like, decide now if on television, you're going to be legally bound to this person with marriage. Right. So then you have to decide like in front of the cameras, if you're going to make that happen. So at the very best, I guess, you just, like, if you do break up, you have just a legal hassle of divorce, you know, on your hands.
Yeah, that shit's a lot of pressure because, you know, you know down the line, they're going to, you know, 6 months, a year, whenever it happens, they're going to get into this big argument. And they'll be like, I don't like you. I hate you. Well, you married me. I was under pressure that producers took me to Mexico and said, you either got to marry her or you can't have sex anymore. I wanted to have sex in Mexico. I said, yes.
I mean, the producer talked me into it, and my agent said it would be a good move, so I did it.
Go ahead.
I think the saving grace, I would hope that the marriages are actually so brief they can just get an annulment. I think if it's like not 3 months, you can just annul it. I saw another one of these shows. It was like, I forget what it was, like Wedding Ambush or something, where it was the same conceit of like two people who don't know each other at all getting married, and the producers liked that moment that Maz was just describing, where it's like the person really has to decide, oh my God, am I actually going to go through with this, marrying this person I don't know? Or am I going to not go through with it, which is also good TV.
Right. Have you guys ever been on like a blind date where you don't know what you're getting into? Has that ever happened to either of you?
Yes. I mean, a friend set me up. So like, I don't know if it was totally blind and that, you know, I was trusting my friend's judgment, right?
Right.
How did it go?
Which can be a disaster in some cases.
How did it go? Did you hit it off with the girl?
It was fine. It was like a nice conversation. And then afterwards, both of us were like, hey, should we do this again? It was like, no, but we'll be polite and pretend like maybe, but no, it's just, you know, it's like just not a match.
Right. So it was not, yeah.
And I had the opposite. I had this friend of mine who... I worked in an ad agency, and there was this girl who started working there, and she was great. And I was like, oh my God, my other friend is going to love you. You guys, like, to me, they were perfect. I go, this is, so excited. I go, yeah, this is, I go, when is this lunch happen? Let me help. I don't know what level of involvement I had. I might even like reserve the restaurant, whatever it was. I was like, this is, and I was waiting for them to come back and be like, oh my God, we're going to name our first son Maz.
Yeah, totally.
They both came back. They're like, I didn't like the guy at all. And she's like, and then he's like, she's not my cup of tea. I was like, really? I go, well, how did I get that wrong? It seems so right.
I have like a marriage under my belt in terms of setting people up. At least being the vehicle by which they met. I have written and rewritten people's online dating profiles that have led them to many dates. I've helped them vet swipes. I feel like I love matchmaking. Love it. And
you're
in
a
one
Yentl.
Case,
you're a Yentl.
Yes, indeed. And I feel like I've gotten it right a few times, or at least people like, oh, I see why you set us up. You know, it's like not going to go anywhere, but I can totally see why you set us up. I feel like that is a reasonable response.
Have you seen Indian Matchmaker on Netflix?
No. I've seen like a commercial for it.
Indian Matchmaker is amazing, and you just made me think that you should have your own version somewhere, because this Indian Matchmaker, she is so cool. She's like a Navy SEAL. She'll show up. She'll talk to the guy. She'll talk to the girl. She figures it out. And then they interview her, and she's like, I don't think there's going to be much chance of anybody wanting to marry this girl, but I'm going to do my best. And she's great, but you have to watch Indian Matchmaker. I binged the whole thing one season. And then I want Negin Persian Matchmaker.
Is anyone listening on all of the televisions? Can someone give me Negin Matchmaker? Because I feel like this is my part of my calling. I love it. Okay. Well, folks, let me know how much do looks matter. And I just want to say, too, on a dating front, I've dated dudes that are like, I guess, maybe traditionally considered ugly. And I've dated dudes that are traditionally considered hot. I've never really been moved by looks one way or the other. It's like, it's another chemical thing that happens for me. You know what I mean? So I think like a show like this, like, I think I could throw on a prosthetic and figure it out, right? Because it is another quality. It's not so looks based for me.
Well, I think
I'm awesome. I'm not to say that I'm so morally above you guys. I'm just saying, like, I noticed in my history of dudes that they've been all over the place with looks. But I have friends who only date hot people. Like, and I see that, you know, oh, that bird's very hot.
But you said not traditionally. I forget what the word was you said, but basically people that are considered hot.
Yeah, like mainstream hot.
Yeah, but I agree with you. Like, there have been people that, you know, someone would like, oh my God, she's so hot. And I look and there's zero attraction. There's zero sexual attraction. And then you'll see somebody, like you said, who does not the standard hot, but something about, you know, they're like, oh my God, I'm turned on by this girl, whatever it is.
So it's in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? Because this is from the New York Times article about it, describing Sexy Beast. They attempt to establish a romantic connection without knowledge of any other dating partner's craniofacial features, apart from eye color and, in some cases, general interior mouth appearance. Hey, for me, general interior mouth appearance is the whole ball game. So this conceit that you don't know the person's physical traits, not true, in my opinion. Not true.
Well, and also you're getting, like, their whole body, right?
That's right.
So you can tell what their body type is and all that stuff. So it's true that they're getting more information than the show is letting on.
And if you've got a mouse fetish, you know, Yahtzee, because the person is dressed up like a mouse.
Folks, let me know what you think of this whole conceit. And I don't know, did you start talking to a person before seeing them, and then did it change or did it work or what happened? I'm so curious. We're going to take a quick break and learn about our sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Tucker Carlson, but stay tuned. We're going to make it fun. Don't worry. And we are back and we're ready for topic number two. So, you guys, let's talk about Tucker Carlson. And to be honest, I'm sort of loath to do it because I'm like, who cares about this fucking guy? But we read a profile of him in the Washington Post. And in it, a conservative researcher named Christopher Rufo was quoted as saying that, quote, the reality is that Tucker Carlson Tonight is the highest rated show in cable news. And to a large extent, Tucker frames the narrative for conservative politics. Tucker doesn't react to the news. He creates the news. So with that kind of impact, I just feel like we might have to know a little bit about Tucker, but I do apologize to you both and to myself for making us learn more about him. What were your general thoughts about Tucker Carlson before, you know, reading this piece and your sense of his influence?
I feel like he's kind of snuck up. Like, I always thought Bill O'Reilly and then Sean Hannity, I felt like those guys were the guys. And Tucker, I just remember the bow tie.
Yes,
and he seemed kind of like a bit of a buffoon, but just this guy. And then to see that he's so now influential, I have friends that are on the right that watch him, and they'll send me nonsensical rants that he makes, but they think that it's, you know, a good thing that he's saying, and it's nuts. It's just totally this whole thing of him saying, like, I mean, in the article, he talks a lot about he's taking this angle of. He doesn't want to be blamed for slavery and, you know, people that are against critical race theory. All this stuff is so stupid and silly. It's like nobody's blaming you.
Yeah.
But there's a history, dum-dum.
Right, it's like right. He talks about that a lot. Jeffrey, what was your sense?
So much of my brain space is devoted to not letting Tucker Carlson into my brain space.
Yeah, same here.
You apologized for bringing this topic up. Apology accepted. Really, my ideal state is just not talking about or being aware of Tucker Carlson. But no, I don't know. I mean, he does have this weird career arc where 20 years ago, he was like the House conservative on CNN and later MSNBC. And he was, yeah, like the bow tie really sticks in the mind. Like, that's what he was known for first. So yeah. He was in a league with like Orville Redenbacher and Louis Farrakhan, which is a weird triad.
Very weird.
Yeah. And then so he took over Bill O'Reilly's spot. And it did kind of make me remember how happy I was when Bill O'Reilly left.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, great. Like, that guy's not going to be on the air anymore. And, you know, I don't know why I was so naive. Like, you know, Fox News wasn't going to replace Bill O'Reilly's slot with new episodes of Fawlty Towers. Like, of course, they're going to get some other right-wing blowhard in there. And they did. And this is the guy who has that spot at the moment.
Right. They're like cockroaches. They keep coming. You can't get rid of them.
Yeah, and it's funny because I wonder... I have thought, like, oh, I wonder what Bill O'Reilly's position is on vaccines.
I did not wonder that. That's interesting that you wondered that.
No, just as you're talking, I'm just like, oh, they replaced Bill O'Reilly with this guy. Where would Bill O'Reilly have been on this? Because it's unclear that Bill O'Reilly even had the same cultural. I mean, he had a huge cultural impact, but I don't even know if it's the same as Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson right now seems to be just the leader, you know, just the straight up leader of what the discourse is. And just for people who might not know some of the stuff that he spewed, if like, you know, like the three of us, you don't watch him. He has echoed Trump's falsehoods about the election being rigged. He promotes baseless notions of that the FBI agents were behind the storming of the Capitol. He is pretty pro-vaccine, but like still questions the efficacy of the vaccine and tells, you know, it engages in a lot of like conspiracy theorying around the vaccine. He questioned whether George Floyd's death was caused by a police officer. He says Black Lives Matter is poison. Again, like that thing that Maz, you were talking about where he takes it personally, that like slavery, you know, that he wasn't responsible for slavery, like as if that's what anyone's saying. That is really, really central to his view of the world and his view of everything.
It's all done with questions. You throw out questions so that your viewers go, oh yeah, of course. Well, yeah. You know, so like what you just said, he could say, if the FBI wasn't involved in the storming of the Capitol, how did they get past the police so easily? Why were cameras there ready to film them? Blah, 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 blah. And so someone said, they go like, yeah, he's right.
Yeah,
why
questions.
Was that?
Yeah,
man, as you're if making vaccines... some good points. How did they get past the police so easily?
And the thing with this critical race theory bullshit, it's like...
Oh, which is the centerpiece right now of his show, basically.
Well, it's the centerpiece of a lot of people's argument on the right. And I go, guys, we don't want our kids to learn that America was bad. Really? It's like saying, like, that dad was such a funny guy. Yeah, but he used to beat everybody. Yeah, but he was a really funny guy. Remember when he extorted money from people? But a funny guy. What about that time when he beat up the neighbor for just looking at mom in the wrong way? He's a funny guy. Come on, man. Come on.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, too, is that they tried to, in this for this Washington Post profile, they tried to get him to comment and do an interview. And he wrote to the Washington Post, where he gave a statement saying, you want to make me shut up, so you call me a racist. I've seen it before. And that, I think, is also a thing that he's really known for, is if you do call him a racist, or if you call his like line of thinking racist.
Today's show is sponsored by Prose. This is kind of, I feel like, you know, I'm on some sort of Lord of the Rings journey trying to figure out skincare. And I feel like this customized skincare line is really got my name on it. Basically, every bottle of Pro's custom hair care and skincare, I tried the skincare just recently, is made to order and it's personalized. It's got a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs, like specifically you. And then the way they do it is you take this great, like in-depth quiz, basically. They analyze over 80 factors for a complete view of your life, your beauty goals. Like I have oily skin that's also dry, which is just a fun little conundrum. I live in New York City. Like we've got these four seasons. My face gets weird during seasonal shifts. All of these things I got to kind of talk about in answering the questions. The other fun thing was they asked us at the end, like, do you like a creamy type of moisturizer or like a less creamy kind? And I was kind of like, I think like less creamy. And they were like, that's fine. Like you can do that, but we think for your skin type, creamier is better. And I never knew that. So I love that there's so much kind of personal information that goes into creating this. I got my stuff in the mail very quickly after. I got a wonderful serum. Like I said, this very creamy moisturizer. And this also very just delectably creamy cleanser that just kind of feel like I think it's possible that I've been washing my face with just like harshness. For like many years, because when I saw this cleanser, I was like, oh, is this what it's supposed to feel like? It's supposed to feel like a little bit of a delight on my face. That's not what I've been doing. So I don't know, guys. And here's the thing, you don't have to take my word for it. In a third party, double blind, dermatologist supervised controlled clinical study, which is like the gold standard for research studies, Pros prove that personalization works better than off-the-shelf alternatives, which just sort of totally makes sense on a just logical level if you think about it. Just it makes common sense. Pros are so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% of your first subscription order at pros.com/FakeTheNation will be taken off. That's pros.com/FakeTheNation. You get your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formulas. Again, that's pros.com/FakeTheNation. Go and get your just super personalized, luxurious skincare products and hair care products. That's what I'm going to try next. So pros.com/FakeTheNation.
I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8-exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. It fuels him. Like, he loves that because he easily is like, no, 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 you're racist because you're trying to make white people feel bad for stuff. One thing that I thought was really interesting about the profile, like this moment really stuck out to me. I don't know if it stuck out to you guys, but they looked at some memoir that he wrote. And in that memoir, he pinpoints the moment he kind of became a conservative or rather an anti-liberal. And he pinpoints it to like a teacher he had in first grade named Mrs. Raymond. And he talked about Mrs. Raymond having Indian skirts, sobbing at her desk, how Mrs. Raymond couldn't teach Tucker how to read and write, how his dad had to hire a tutor for him separately to get through the like reading and writing stuff when he was in first grade. And then they interviewed Mrs. Raymond right now, 3 to 4 decades later, whatever. And Raymond said in the interview, she's like, that was so crazy. I don't own Indian skirts. I never talked about my political views in the class. Like I never cried in class. I don't know what that story is. I not only taught Carlson how to read and write, but I was also hired by his parents to come and teach him reading and writing at home. So they not only liked this teacher enough at school, they liked her enough to hire her separately to come and do extra work with him. So it's like his account of being 6 was already just this crazy. You know, I mean, obviously it's he said, she said in parts of it, but it just seems like the fact that the parents hired her really puts a hole in his story.
Well, Nagin, you're starting to make me think that he might be kind of a bad guy who plays fast and loose with the truth. I did think that was unbelievable. Mrs. Raymond does seem, I mean, would you trust an adult's memory or a 6-year-old's memory? And my mom's a first grade teacher, so I reflexively take the first grade teacher's side, but that did seem like a pretty incredible, manufacturing that narrative, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
And how he makes this, you know, seem so liberal. It's like me saying like, yeah, my teacher was right wing. He had cowboy boots. He used to put us in cages. Right. He wore red hats. Right. He wouldn't let the immigrants into the classroom.
The description is so on the nose. Sobbing in the class while wearing Indian skirts. Like, what are you talking about?
By the way, she's a first grade teacher. She's allowed to sob. Okay. You know how hard it is to deal with first graders?
By the way, just like side note, I've been taking my kid to like a summer camp every day this week. And when we take her up the stairs of this little school, it's just basically preschool, but like in summer camp named summer camp. And when we take her up the stairs of the school and the teacher comes out and like is there to take the kid inside or whatever, my daughter has just been just like sobbed, sees this woman, sobs. And I'm like, wow, what a weird response you have to deal with like every day from random kids. It's like one kid will see you and just start hysterically crying, which is probably a lot of where this memory is steeped for Tucker Carlson. He was probably the one sobbing in first grade. So I guess in our final thoughts here, do you think he's going to have a lasting impact? I mean, where do you see this guy going or not going?
Oh, lasting impact. He is the person who is presently giving voice to those viewpoints. And if it wasn't him, I mean, I go back to Bill O'Reilly. If it wasn't him, it'd probably be some other guy. Much the same way, you know, you can ask, like, why are there so many kids movies with fart jokes in them? The answer is because kids want to watch that. Why are there so many of these, like, really vitriolic opinion shows? Because people want that.
Yeah, and if you guys, I don't know if you guys saw Into the Storm, the QAnon documentary. It was great on HBO Max. It's a 5 or 6 episode series. And the guy basically finds out who Q is. And it's this guy, this like kind of nerdy dude in Japan who just puts all this stuff on the internet. And people, like you were just saying, Jeffrey, people want to see this, that, oh my God, this conspiracy. It's clearly, they're connecting the lines all the time, the dots. And similarly, I think Tucker is that right now. I'm just waiting. It's a matter of time before he either says something or something comes out about what a horrible human being he is, to the point where Fox is going to be like, oh, we can't have him on anymore either. So now let's bring on.
I think it should come
next.
Out that he named his son Buckley Carlson. What a cruel thing to do to your kid.
It's a tough one. Folks, let me know what you thought. There's this profile is really fascinating in the Washington Post, so check it out. Let us now move on to topic number 3. So we read a piece in the New York Times titled How to Raise Kids Who Won't Be Racist. This feels like a little bit of the opposite of the last segment. So my first question is, you know, do either of you have kids and have you dealt with this question?
I do not have kids. And I appreciate being asked for my opinion on child rearing, you know, much in the same way.
I happen to know that Maz has kids, so I was I'm curious just generally your philosophical position on this shit. But Maz, I'm also wondering about your just actual lived experience with this.
Well, you know, I'm Iranian. My wife's Indian, so I teach my kids to be racist against Indians so that I can win in the battle of parents. No, they they're really good. I mean, I'm always amazed that they go to these schools that are pretty progressive, and they talk to them about stuff. And we have, you know, since they were kids, our neighbor's husband was black, wife was white. The kids were best friends with my kids. It feels like skin color wasn't an issue.
Right.
Interestingly enough, just this past summer, my son is now 13. We took them to a sleepaway camp. And we didn't realize, my wife had signed them up thinking that it was like all kinds of sports. So we signed my son up for parkour, which I say is like a very West Side sport where you teach your kids how to...
For those of you who can't see this, he is using air quotes around the word sport, which I think is completely appropriate in this case.
Well, yeah, it's like you teach your kids how, if they get in trouble, how to jump up the side of a building and run away.
I think we need to not endorse that particular tactic. If you get in trouble, jump off a building.
No, not jump off a building. If you get into like
building.
Yes, scale a building and run away. Whereas like tough kids learn to fight, right? My kids learn to escape by scaling the building like Spider-Man and get out. Anyway,
no, you can't do that. Nagin, where are the lawyers on this show? You can't tell kids to do that.
Sorry, Jeffrey, you're talking to a parkour fan, okay?
Oh.
So
ooh.
I'm going to let it stand.
I didn't know this was an Iranian parkour theme episode. I feel very out of
place. So we go to the camp, and all the kids are these, it's a skateboarding camp, and all the kids are these white skateboarders, and it's like 2 hours outside of LA, and it feels very Stop the Steely. And my son, who looks more Indian than Iranian, he goes, Daddy, I'm the only person of color here. I go, don't worry, buddy. You'll be fine. You'll do fine. The next day we're on the phone with him. How's it going? He's like, well, they called me Abdul.
Uh-oh.
And then they told me not to blow up their house.
Oh, great.
And they told me to go back to Africa.
Wait, this is literally 2021?
It was like a month ago.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Bad stuff.
What did you say?
Did he scale a building to escape the situation?
He did scale a building to escape the situation, and they couldn't say it anymore. No, he stood up for himself, and he was saying things back, and it's out there. I mean, like I said, my kids grow up around this, and they're in private schools that are very on top of it and very woke, let's say. And then when they go to things like this, you go, oh wow, this stuff is not stopped; it's still out there.
And then what did you say to him, like, as a parent? Like,
oh, I started sending him, I was like, because I was texting him, I go, tell the kid, whatever, Wonder Bread. And then I was like,
call him
Casper. I go, call him Casper. And then I was like, because it was skateboarding, I was like, if he's skinny, call him Bony Hawk instead of Tony Hawk. And my son's like, Dad, no one gets your references. I'm like, forget it.
Oh my God, yeah, they're like we're eating organic sourdough bread from a sourdough that's like, you know, from, you know, 13 years ago, like yeast in from San Francisco. Yeah. So we don't, what is Wonder Bread? That's really sad. I mean, but I like the comedic approach to handling it. But okay, so Jeffrey, the article points out that children, that children do notice race. So there's this whole school of thought among some parents, that you should do this kind of colorblind parenting where you don't really talk about race. You don't like point it out, you know, you don't want to point out that someone's different. And the article points out that children actually do notice race. They do notice and people like look different. And so, quote, attempts to suppress discussions about race and racism are misguided because those efforts won't eliminate prejudice. They may, in fact, make it worse. So basically, colorblind parenting isn't, you know, just unhelpful. It could actually perpetuate racism. How does that sound to you? Does that sound like it makes sense as a non-parent?
Yeah. Speaking as someone who knows nothing about the topic. It does seem silly denialism, I would think, would never be the way to go as a parent. If your child is noticing something and asking about it, to just go, no, what are you? I haven't noticed that. That's ridiculous. We might argue that race is not a meaningful construct, but it is certainly a thing in the world. It is a thing people notice. And it's not only likely, it's probable that your kid is at some point going to notice, I've got this skin color, somebody else has a different skin color. What's up with that? It is probably good as a parent to have something to say about, you know, what that means to people and how that has affected people in the past, rather than just going, no, what are you talking about? I don't know.
Right. And actually a 2012 study showed that white parents thought their preschoolers harbored no racial prejudice, but then they did a test of the actual preschoolers, and those preschoolers said that they didn't want to have black friends.
Yeah, it's the kids' fault. That's the subtext of this article, is that the kids are super racist. The kids are the problem.
So like basically not talking about it doesn't help. And it's what's interesting is that also that in another study found that white children who had learned about racial discrimination had more positive attitudes towards black people. I think what's also weird about this whole thing is because, like Maz, you're saying you're Iranian, your wife is Indian, their best friends are biracial. I'm Iranian, my husband is black, my kid is biracial, right? So like it hasn't come up yet with her. She's too young. But for example, she did see the new Space Jam poster the other day. She was pointing at it because she really wants to see this movie. And LeBron James is in that poster, right? And she kept pointing at him being like, ba-ba, ba-ba, because he's a black man and her dad's
a
black man.
You got a racist kid.
Because she's a racist. Right? And I was just like, oh, that's interesting. Like, she at that age is drawing connections, you know what I mean? In which she thinks LeBron James is her dad. And I think that it's funny because she's already born into this, like, just set brochure cover that our family is, diversity brochure cover. Like it sort of comes with the territory. Like I don't feel like I have to. I mean, I probably will feel differently. I don't know, but as of now, I don't feel like I have to schedule in a talk about race because she's just living it. You know what I mean? So it's just a different relationship. I feel like this is something that's more geared towards like white families, you know, because they have to be like, oh shit, like they're going to meet black people. I want to make sure, or Latinx people or whatever, Middle Eastern people. I want to make sure that they don't call them Abdul or, you know, whatever it is. Right.
I think it's almost certainly going to be a bigger issue if you're a white person and you live in a really white area. I mean, the experience I can draw from is my nephews, who I'm very close with, live in the D.C. area. And, they're both white. My brother-in-law is white, so they're white kids. But the area they live in, it's D.C. So it's not like a white area with a couple non-white people sprinkled in. It's everyone everywhere all the time.
Right,
I think
right.
A situation like that makes a, you know, sit-down conversation a lot less necessary. It's just a reality they've always been familiar with, and it's not really weird to them.
Also, it's age. You got, you know, first of all, you can't just go to your 6-year-old and be like, hey, let's talk about race. You know, they're right. Like, what? Are we running? What are we doing?
Yeah.
So you really got to, you got to answer them honestly if they ask the questions. That's number one. Because a lot of times, you know, people try to, you know, dance around the issue, but you should answer them honestly. And then if they're seeing things or things come up, again, you have honest conversations with them. And as they get older, it's going to come up more and more, or you'll be able to have mature conversations when they're teenagers and say, hey, do you have any black friends at school? Do you have any Latino friends at school? Why is that? Or whatever that is. What you were just saying, Jeffrey, interestingly enough, back in our old house where the couple was mixed race, the white mom of the family had her nephew come from Wisconsin. Mm. And I guess this nephew wasn't as exposed to the diversity we see in Los Angeles. At this time, I think they were probably like 7 or 8 years old. I forget how old they were. I took them to go see a movie, and there was an Indian Sikh at the movie with a turban, washed his hands, and the kids are washing their hands before we go inside the movie. And my kids just head down, they walk in. The kid from Wisconsin turns to me.
By the way, I enjoy the hygiene brag that you just made in there. Go ahead.
Of course. I'm going to, this is pre-COVID. I had kids washing hands.
Okay.
So my kids and the other kids, LA kids, see the Indian Sikh, don't think twice. The kid from Wisconsin, I kid you not, he waits for the Indian Sikh to walk away, and he turns to me and goes, and he was scared. He goes, that guy was Al-Qaeda. And I go, what?
Oh, my God.
He was Al-Qaeda. I go, no.
The kids are the problem. The kids
You're like,
are
you mean
problem.
Fred?
Yeah.
And that kid is now Tucker Carlson. All right, folks, let me know what you think. Do you have any, like, pro tips for how to raise kids that aren't racist? Because I truly want to take notes. I don't know how this is going to pan out with my own kid, with my own racist child. Let's see what happens. All right, folks, that is the end of the show. Oh, my God. Thank you so much for joining me. And what I would really love is for the folks of Fake the Nation to be able to find you and see and hear all of the stuff that you do. Maz Jobrani, where do they do that?
They can follow me. I'm at Maz Jobrani on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I just got on TikTok.
Oh, my God.
Every Maz Jobrani, MazJobrani. I've monopolized this guy.
Jeffrey Maurer, where do people find you?
They can find me on imightbewrong.substack.com. That's my newsletter. That's where all my creative energy is going right now. And it's free, which I think is an appropriate price.
Oh, my God. I can't wait to subscribe to your Substack. You're clearly hilarious, and what everyone should read what you have to say. And everyone should go see Maz on tour. Don't forget to go see him on tour. I'm a friend, but also a fan who loves watching Maz Jobrani perform. So definitely go do that. Folks, you know where to find me and all the things that I do. But what I would really like to do is thank all the people who make this show possible. That's our producer, Julia Linden, our sound engineer, Stephanie Aguilar, the wonderful people at HeadGum. Our theme music is written by Gabi Alter. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts because it helps people find the show. You can email us at fakethenation@headgum.com to let us know about guest ideas, segment ideas, whatever ideas. Join the Patreon for bonus content. You can do that at patreon.com/NagineFarsad. And we will be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum podcast.